The phone went at 1 in the morning, and I knew who it was. Oh, no, I thought, not him, but it had to be him. We'd only got the baby off an hour ago. Peter, he said, I've lost me job. There were tears in his voice. It was pitiful, honestly. Him, the Iron Man. But I couldn't sound surprised. It had been coming for weeks. Call me in tonight and sack me, he said. The bastards. This is what shocked me, his tone. The feeling sorry for himself. After all he'd dinned into me over the years. Don't squeal. Pick yourself up and get on with it. Footballers don't cry. If they kick you, you kick them back. Never to give up. Never to feel sorry for yourself. And now here he was, how they'd done this to him, how they'd done that to him. Full of self-pity, wanting comfort. Till it was almost like I was him now and he was me. Peter, he said, Peter, I hope you'll never know what it's like to have this happen to you. To be stabbed in the back by a lot of ungrateful, fat-arsed businessmen that know F-all about this game. That's what hurts. To take it from them. Me that's given my life to the game. I was still half asleep. I said, yes, Dad, I know, Dad. I felt bad. God bless you, Dad, I said. I'll phone first thing tomorrow. Then I put down the phone and took it off the hook. Else I knew he'd be back. I lay awake thinking how much I'd always admired him. Just a little lad. Going to watch him play at Bolton and at Rotherham. Then later on, when he dropped out of the league at Wigan and Boston and Kettering. Get in, Dad. Go on, Dad. Centre-half, great big fella, coming in bang with his thick legs, ploughing through the mud with his sliding tackles, taking the man, the ball, the lot. A hard man, very tough, very brave, a bit dirty. No, I never thought that then. All those little back gardens, left foot, right foot, left foot. Come on, Peter, come on! I was frightened of him, me. Him so big and me so little. Like mother, never really growing. You'll be a winger, he said, and what I wanted to be was a centre-half like him, big and strong, coming in like a tank. Peter, he'd say, you're my answer, son. When you make it, I'll make it. The war did me, Peter, as a player. Took the best years of my career away, stopped me realising my potential. If I'd played for England like I should, there'd have been no stopping me afterwards, manager of Arsenal, manager of Everton. But I had to start with rubbish. I've done miracles with rubbish, worked wonders with rubbish. I knew about recycling before it had ever been invented. But you get no medals for that. And he hadn't. He'd last 3 months here, 6 months there. Then something would snap. He'd quarrel with the chairman, blow his top to the press. He'd even thump one of the players. And out he'd go. Off we'd go. Another little house. Poor mother packing and unpacking all over again. No wonder she was worn out. No wonder she died. But you, Peter, he'd say, you will justify me by your career. They will begin to see that I practice what I preach through my own son, whom nobody can say I did not develop. You will never disappoint me, Peter. I know that. I wouldn't. I knew it too. I'd rather cut my leg off. I'd never been so chuffed as when he got that job with City. More than when I came to Rovers and to London. Even more than when I first played for England. And to be honest, I think I know why. There was relief in it. Not just because he'd be happy now, he'd stop complaining now, but because in a funny sort of way, things were like they should be again. Me an England player, but him a top manager. With only one thing spoiling it, knowing people were whispering and hinting. Would he have ever managed City if he hadn't been my father, if I weren't playing for England? And why did I play for England, I'd ask, whenever I got wind of it? Because of him, Dad, and his coaching. But you could see by their faces that you'd not convince them. I couldn't even convince Marion. He didn't make you, she said. I'm sick of hearing that from him and you. He was lucky to have you. No, no, I said. You don't know football, Marion. I know him, she said, and I know you. He'd always told me, don't get married early. I tried to explain it to Marion. It's not you, I said. No, she said, and it's not you either. It's him. Everything for him. He wants you to be a little puppet, dancing to his strings. For the first time in my life, I'd started hating him. My own son, he said since, and I wasn't invited to his wedding. Things changed. It was inevitable. The moment we walked into that registry office, they'd changed. It was the first big thing in my life I'd ever done without him. The first I'd ever done against him. But when he got the City job, it helped to change things back again. It wasn't me getting 200 quid a week while he got 40 anymore, and much too proud to accept anything. I'll not take a penny, he said. The satisfaction I've had from you, you can't buy it. He's a wonderful man, if you only but know him. So after breakfast, while Marion was feeding the baby, I telephoned him. He was still in the same state. They're being very vindictive about it, he said. There's still nearly 18 months of my contract to run. 10 grand they owe me, and they've as good as told me I can sue them for it. And this clubhouse. They're turning me out of that as well. Dad, I said. What else could I say? Come down and stay with us. You sure, he said. What about Marion? What about the baby? There's tons of room, Dad, I said. Marion won't mind, just until you get settled, till you get another job. She was choked when I told her, Marion. Without even asking me, she said. Just for a week, I told her. While he looks around, he's shattered, Marion. He'll shatter us, she said. He was in a state when he got to us, all tense and taut, that twitch at the left side of his mouth. It'll be down to your knees soon, he said, looking at my hair. His was the short back and sides he'd always had. Hello, Marion, he said. He kissed her on the cheek, and she took it like it was a vaccination. Then he kissed John, the baby, and his face relaxed. He liked the baby. He started playing with his fingers, but John burst out crying. He's tired, Marion said, and took him away. The old man glanced around the place. It was a lovely house. It had cost 30,000. By gum, he said, like he always did. Things have changed a bit since I were playing. Now he looked out the front and said, that your new car? It was an XJ Jag. He shook his head. I was used to that as well. I don't know, he said. He sat down on the leather sofa, slapped himself on the knees. Well, now let's wait for the offers to come pouring in. It's early days, Dad, I said. Oh, yes, he said. I don't expect them to come rushing, not falling over themselves. Don't feel bitter, Dad, I told him. Bitter? He said, I'm not bitter. I'm resigned to it, me. Directors, bloody amateurs. Obstructing a professional. That's the system, Dad, I said. You'll not change it. He went quiet, not even looking at me, sitting there like he was embarrassed, till at last he said, you don't think there'd be something for me at Rovers? It left me speechless. It was the first time in my life he'd ever asked me for anything. Well, Dad, I said, there might be. Not as manager, just now, nor as coach. I know, he said, I didn't mean that. Which made it worse, because what else was there? Scouting? Looking after the reserves? Those weren't for Dad, they never had been. Maybe I could help with the coaching and the scouting, he said. Something like that. I'll try tomorrow, I said. I'll see the boss. Then I made an excuse and left the room. I did talk to the boss, Jeff Creamer, next day. He was uneasy. I could tell he didn't want to upset me. At the same time, obviously he knew about Dad, his reputation. There's not much for him here, Peter, he said. Not for him. Just a bit of scouting and coaching, I said, to be going on with. It shattered him, this. I think maybe he needs to get his confidence back. I'll talk to the chairman, he said. And a couple of days later, he called me in and told me, we've got something for your father on the lines he asked for. I'm afraid we can't pay him a lot, but if he just regards it as a port in a storm. So he started with them, coaching and scouting like he'd wanted, going to look at teams and players for the boss, taking individual players for special skills out at Epsom, where we train, nice and near my home. Of course, I was glad he'd got the job, very glad, for him. But it made things strange. Dad couldn't change. You couldn't expect him to. He'd still tell me what to do, how to play, when to go to bed, even when to go on the job. Never the night before a match. It's like losing 2 pints of blood. Like I was still a kid. Marion could hardly keep quiet. I don't know how you put up with it, she'd say afterwards, treating you like a baby, and he wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for you. I know, I said. That's why I put up with it. He knows it too. He's on 45 a week. Our reserves earn more than that. But without him, what would I be earning? Now and again, I'd look at his face when he thought I wasn't, and I'd see the bitterness, the disappointment. That was the end with City. I knew it, and he knew it. The end as far as managing a big club was concerned. He'd upset too many people. He'd bollocked too many people. He'd thumped too many people. No wonder he was afraid to leave us. No wonder he was forever lecturing me. I was all he'd got left. And then it started at the club. I'd been afraid it would. First, he didn't reckon the coach, Bobby Birchall, which was par for the course. He never reckoned any coach, especially one that was coaching me. He'd be out on the field there at Epsom when Bobby was working with us, shaking his head, clicking his tongue, making faces, till it was obvious that Bobby noticed. Naturally, he didn't like it. One day, Jeff had me into the office. He said, Peter, you'll have to talk to your father. I've been expecting this. We're glad to have him here, he said, till he gets something else. But he must realise Bobby Burchill is coach, and I'm the manager. I know, I said, but it's difficult for Dad. He's used to helping me. Just a quiet word, the boss said. I shouldn't like anything to go wrong. And he gave me what we used to call his man-management smile, the smile on the face of the tiger. Of course I didn't talk to Dad, how could I? He'd no time for Bobby, and even less for the boss. They'll burn you out, this club, he say. Using you like they do, this 4-4-2. They'll want you on both bloody wings and fetching and carrying in midfield. I'm going to have a word with Jeff Creamer if it goes on. You'll not last three seasons. I'll tell him you're killing the goose that lays the golden eggs. Trouble was, there was truth in what he said, like there nearly always was. The big blow-up came when we played Milan in the first leg of the European Cup Winners' Cup quarter-final at our place. Everything went wrong in the first half. They were playing this packed defence with a sweeper, body-checking a lot, shirt-pulling. And when they broke away and scored, we got desperate, just banging long balls into the middle, which their defence was eating. At half-time, Bobby and the boss came into the dressing room with the old man who'd been sitting on the bench with Bobby. As soon as I saw him, I could tell we were in for trouble. The boss and Bobby just stood there like a couple of dummies with nothing to offer at all. I was longing for them to say something, anything, just to fill the silence before the old man leapt in, which he did. He started. Well, if you two haven't got anything to say, I have. I've never seen such a pathetic exhibition. You're playing right into their hands. No skill, no method, no intelligence. On and on he went. And he was still at full blast when the buzzer went for the second half. Bobby and the boss hadn't opened their mouths. The thing was that his pep talk worked. I think that's what they couldn't forgive him. We did get our tails up. We did start playing better. We equalised and very nearly won. After the match, the boss didn't show in the dressing room at all, just Bobby, looking a bit sheepish, and the old man, who of course was full of it. He never could read situations outside football. There was a reception afterwards, the usual drag, speeches, a cold buffet, and a couple of beers at most, because you knew the boss was looking. He didn't speak to the old man, nor did any of the directors. There was what you might call an atmosphere. The word went round that a few of the lads were going on to the sportsman's club. I asked Dad if he'd like to come, and nearly got me head bit off. If you'd been trying, you'd all be too tired to do anything but go to bed, which is what you should do after a match, another of his favourite moans. So it was a confrontation, the last thing I wanted. But I couldn't back down, not in front of the lads. Well, I'm going, Dad, I said. I'll see you later. He went on staring for a while, and then he said, "You little tyke," and walked away. I felt bad leaving him. We were there till nearly 3 a.m, but when I got home, the light was still on in the front room. He was sitting there with his head in his hands. I'd never seen him look that shattered, eyes all red. He looked 100 years old. "They've sacked me, Peter," he said, and he began to cry. "I'm sorry, Dad," I said. And he said, "Sorry? Is that all you can say? You're not going to stay there, are you? You'll ask for a transfer." But I shook my head. "Get up," I thought. "Get up. Footballers don't cry." The words sprang into my throat and choked me. I knew he'd never get up now.